is the 90 Plus Podcast. With your host, Ben Rigetti and Sebastian Pereira.
All right, we are back. Myself, Ben Rigetti, joined by my co-host, Sebastian Pereira, bringing you episode 16 of the 90 Plus Podcast, bringing you guys all the latest news and updates about everything at Vancouver Whitecaps related. And we've got some stuff to talk about. It's been a few weeks, as I said, since we last talked at the end of the Whitecaps MLS's back dream. Obviously, they fell to Kansas City in penalties in the round of 16. It was good that we got that far. You know, we had a bit of a breakout tournament for a few players. Good to see some people really sort of come into their own. And now we get to see a little bit more as the MLS is returning to play. There's going to be phase one where basically we're going to see the Whitecaps take on Toronto and Montreal, playing three games against each side over the next couple of weeks. And really, realistically, it's just going to be for regular season points once they figure out whatever this regular season is going to be, or, you know, how it's going to look after this phase one. It's three games out east, three games back at BC Place, two out east against Toronto, two at home against Montreal, then one on each side. Realistically, it's just going to be, you know, it's good to see a bit more of just a regular season format rather than the tournament and the knockout stage and all those sort of things. So it's good, just a six-game group stage. And then the winner of that side also does take on the winner of the Canadian Premier League Island Games for the Voyagers Cup. And obviously that's a tournament that hasn't been that kind to Vancouver over the last decade or so, really, since they joined the MLS. So it'll be nice to see if they can squeeze their way back into the final of that one. But before we have a lot of to talk about in this show, and as always, I'll bring in my co-host, Sebastian Pereira. Sebastian, episode 16, we've got some stuff to talk about. How's it going?
Pretty good. I mean, it's been a busy last couple of weeks, of course, for the Whitecaps, for the MLS. Of course, the MLS's back tournament was finished with a W for Portland Timbers, our southern neighbors. They clinched a CONCACAF Champions League spot with a 2-1 victory over Orlando City. So, I mean, there are rivals, but we gotta throw some credit where it's due. So, nice job to them for a great tournament and entertaining us all. And there's been so much going on with the Whitecaps the last couple of weeks, including the new release of the regular season schedule, the Phase 1 schedule. I think we're all really happy to see play continue. Obviously, the tournament down in Florida was very exciting, and it was good to see some MLS again after a long wait in quarantine. But it's good that the whole tournament went without a flop or anything. There was no real problems after the first couple of weeks, where Nashville and Dallas were forced to leave the tournament because of a lot of positive cases going around their squads. So. It's great, and I think we're both really excited to see the Whitecaps continue playing. Of course, as you said, Ben, they've conjured up quite a bit of momentum in the early stages of that that SKC game and the Chicago Fire game as well. They were able to get positive results, and hopefully that's something they can build off here in these next couple games.
And yeah, I think we're kind of hopping into it just at the right time. The Whitecaps' first game against Toronto is actually tomorrow, Tuesday, August 18th. Obviously, if you can't figure that out, that means we are recording this on the Monday. So about 24 hours from kickoff, just, you know, give or take a little bit. But we're excited to have the boys back out on the pitch. Obviously, they are out east. They've got their opening with two games against Toronto, then the one against the Impact before three games at home at BC Place. We're excited to have them out on the field. We learned a lot from the MLS's back tournament in Orlando. We're excited to see how sort of, you know, because I mean, we do forget, you know, we signed, you know, Cavallini in the offseason. We didn't have Andy Rose, and we had some big center back breakout performances. Bikel hasn't made an appearance yet for the team. You know, there's still lots of players that are still jostling in for position that, even though we just had a relatively successful tournament, you know, there's still a lot of question marks about this Whitecaps roster. And one question mark that we won't have to answer, at least for the time being, is the center midfield position. We do have a bit more of a solution with that. The Whitecaps parted ways with Inbom Hwang, not shipping him off, I guess. That sounds a bit harsh, but we did sell him to Rubin Kazan in the Russian league. I'll let you take the reins on this one, Sebastian, before I give my piece on it.
Yeah, I mean, the news came last Friday when the Whitecaps released that they had officially parted ways with Inbom, and they let him achieve his dream. I mean, ever since he arrived to the Whitecaps, he made it clear very publicly that his goal was to find a move to Europe after his time in Vancouver. So, I mean, that's great for him that he was able to find that pathway, and hopefully we wish him hopefully he's able to, I guess, find his rhythm down there in Russia, be a big-time player, and we wish him all the best. But, I mean, when you look at his tenure here at the Whitecaps, it wasn't the brightest. It wasn't really what we expected out of him. We all thought he was going to be a little bit more of like a adventurous, more creative type of player, and we got a lot of flashes, don't get me wrong. There was a lot of moments where I really liked watching Inbom, but I guess especially this season, this weird year that has turned upon not only the Whitecaps, but the whole world itself, really affected Inbom and his play. He wasn't really able to find the rhythm this year. And it really is a good piece of business by the Whitecaps to be able to ship someone off who was not really performing at their best and be able to get a handsome fee for it. I think it's approximately $3 million that they made from that deal. The deal, I think, was 2.5 million euros, if I'm not mistaken.
It was, 2.5, 2.6, something in that ballpark.
Yeah, so and the Whitecaps ended up getting a bit of profit from the previous Inbom deal that when they signed him, they actually signed him for $1.8 million. So they do make profit off Inbom, and I guess the question now is how do they use that final DP spot? Because remember, Inbom was a DP. So I think that's the question on every single Whitecaps fan, every single Whitecaps media member right now. Where is this DP spot going to be invested in?
For me, and again, we talked about this during the tournament, and it became, you know, glaringly obvious, especially with the lack of strikers. Once we were forced to put Reyna up front, maybe Dahomey or whatever else the other options we used down in Orlando, we needed that creativity and that sort of drive in midfield. And we've been calling for this for a while now. We thought it was going to be Inbom, and then, like you said, we saw flashes of it last year. I was blown away in his debut against Minnesota in the season opener last year. There's one point where the audio cut out of the fans. You can just hear Inbom yelling on the field. You know, you could hear that on the TSN cameras and broadcast it to everyone's, you know, living rooms. You could just hear the passion and the drive he had. And, you know, we thought that was going to correlate in on-field success. And it somewhat did. I don't want to say, you know, it was all, he wasn't a bust, he wasn't a letdown, but he just wasn't everything that we had hoped he would be, which obviously isn't what we hoped he would be. So I guess realistically, it's you know, it is a loss. He was a good player to have, but it wasn't a good fit for him, and it wasn't a good fit for Vancouver. So he gets his move. Vancouver gets a DP spot and some money. You can shake hands, be happy. You know, he can be thankful for his year and a half in Vancouver, and he can move on. And then, like you said, coming in, now we have a DP spot. Now we have a little bit of a hole-ish in the midfield. And you, like a lot of people are saying, the obvious choice is for a bit of an attacking midfielder. Because I said this, Sebastian said this, anyone with two eyes that watched the games in Orlando said this, there's way too much of a gap between an isolated striker, and we saw this especially in the first two games, and an isolated striker and the midfield. There was no link-up play, there was no bridge, there was no glue holding them together. It was two separate units not working together, and they needed something or someone to bring that in together. And I really, really hope that this DP slot doesn't go towards a center back or a winger or somewhere where we're relatively stacked up on a little bit. So I really hope this goes into the middle of the park for a game-changing, you know, fast-paced, electric sort of player. And, you know, we can say all this, and realistically, you know, there's, you know, we've got scouts here, there, and everywhere looking for players who fit the bill. And it'll be, you know, just a matter of time before we hopefully at least get someone in a new hoop jersey at BC Place.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the only problem with that is Axel Schuster let the media know, I think it was this weekend, that if they were to bring in someone like right now, ASAP, they would have to wait a total of 10 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, including visa issues, because obviously we're in a global pandemic again. I feel like I'm repeating myself saying that every time we bring up like
You're
a situation.
Not wrong. You're not wrong,
it's crazy. But I mean, 10 weeks is obviously a long time for a player to get adjusted and everything. And that's looking towards a player making his debut in 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. Add that in with training, trying to get adjusted to the team, meeting his teammates, everything. It's a long process. But yeah, as you said, Ben, I mean, the player we want, the player we think the Whitecaps should go for is a creative number 10 playmaker, somewhat that can switch the play and fill that need in between the strikers and the midfield. I think a lot of times during MLS's back, you could see that Mbom wanted to venture forward, but he kind of settled in too much as like a tiebreaker role, like a number six. And that was what kind of caused the gap that we're talking about, the gap in between the strikers and the midfield. And there have been rumors here and there saying that maybe the Whitecaps have found their target, but it's obviously going to be a long wait. The market is really interesting right now. In the words of Axel Schuster, I mean, there is a lot of quality players, honestly, out there for much cheaper prices if we were in a normal world. So I guess it's just a matter of time before we see what the Whitecaps midfield would look like without that DP for now. And I think going forward, I think Axel Schuster, with his wide range of scouting networks and scouting connections that he has across Europe, they'll find a good fit. Hopefully it's the number 10 though, for sure. And maybe some South American flair could be added onto that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I wouldn't complain if it is, you know, South American or, you know, really anybody. It could be, you know, I don't know, someone from, I'm trying to think of just around Libya. I don't know. Like, just Libya. Like, if he can play, get him in the team. Like, realistically, like, and this has been a problem for a while now, ever really since we kind of, Pedro Morales, that sort of time, 2016, 2017, we have really been missing that sort of dynamic and sort of playmaking cam. And even with the thing with Pedro Morales as well, to me, and I might get slewed a little bit, and this is my honest opinion, and some people might not completely agree with this. I think there was a lot of hype around him, and I don't think he was as good as some people think he was. I know that this is, you know,
whoa.
MLS, you know, I don't want to say club legend, but, you know, he was a very skilled player. I'm not denying that, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't the fastest paced, or he was strong on the ball and he could whip in a good corner or a free kick or whatever. But I just think if you watch him in game, he was a little bit sluggish. He was a little bit lazy almost at times. And I think that's the worst thing that we could get right now is someone that looks like they fit the bill and don't. If we get another sort of situation with Mbom where someone comes in and, you know, for the first couple of games, they do a couple of roulettes and step overs and everyone's like, whoa, who is this guy? And then, like, realistically, the dust settles and you look at him and he's, you know, slow in midfield. He's not best positionally. He's not that good of an, you know, he's not really ruthless in and around the box. And again, like, don't get me wrong. We've got Cavallini, Ricketts, but I mean, Cavallini's yet to score for the team. Nerwinski scored in our home opener against Kansas City. And, you know, we didn't score against Kansas City down in Orlando. We got two counterattack, borderline lucky goals against Chicago. Like, let's be honest, we're not a goal-scoring team. We're a work in progress. We've got a few things in the making, a few things in the works, but we're not there yet. We can't just say, oh, let's go out and outscore this team. We have to defend and then take our chances when we get them. You know, we are right now not in a position to dictate that many games. And just the way that, I mean, we especially, I keep coming back to the Seattle game, but you can just so see the almost like two different units between the attackers and the midfielders. There was no one in the middle. There was no build-up play. There's no bridge. There was nothing there. It was just, you know, huge spaces and gaps. And that's why Seattle were able to dominate the midfield. They could get their defenders involved a bit more, use the wing backs, use the holding midfielders that they had. And that's why they were able to build up from the back. And that's why when we build up from the back, we just can't do that, because we get a third of the way up the field and there's no movement, there's no running, there's no pass over the top, there's nothing. You know, we just get, you know, frantic and we lose the ball and then we sit back for defense again. We don't have the skill of the players or the formation figured out just yet. And we're close. And I've said this 100 times in the last month or so. We're close, and that's frustrating because we can see that there's progress being made, but we're just not there yet. We need someone to come in and take that midfield and drive us forward and open up space and make those balls through. And that has to be the Cam. Jordi Reyna, you know, he's decent, but he can't quite do it. You know, he's just not the guy, you know. We try to embalm at Cam, but he's not the guy. And yeah, I just think that we are lacking, just we're desperate almost, just for a Pedro Morales-esque sort of player just to come in, settle the game, set the tempo, have everything go through him and have it work. You know, we just haven't had that in years, basically since Pedro Morales left a few years ago. And we've just been lacking in the middle of the park ever since.
Yeah. And I mean, I like, honestly, in my opinion, I feel like Pedro Morales was like the Diego Valeri for us. Like, he was just like that creative figure that could just drive play forward. He would move the ball really well, switch it from side to side. And it's something the Whitecaps have been missing, I would say, since he left. I think 2017, they got away with it because that was a pretty good squad. Bolaños did most of the creativity in there. They all kind of pitched in with their assists, and Reyna was really fulfilling that number 10 spot. And we all thought he was kind of going to be the successor to Morales. He hasn't been quite that. He's been more of a winger at times, more of a false nine and stuff like that. So I think you have to go out. If I'm Axel Schuster, Mark Dos Santos, you have to go out and get a 10 right now. No doubt about it. I mean, of course, the formations are still in question. We don't know if we're going to go with a 4-4-2. We don't know if we're going to go with a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1. Mm-hmm. It really all depends on the player that the Whitecaps bring in, honestly, because of course, you look at a number 10 and their best role is in a 4-2-3-1, no doubt about it. But if you play a 4-3-3, you can also put him in there as well. He just advances a little bit higher up the field. But no matter what, I think no matter who the signing is, no matter where he fits into the team, I think obviously he has to be a number 10. I think that's clear. But no matter who he is, he's definitely going to bring in some energy into the team, and it's definitely going to make everyone around him better. If he's that fulfilling of his qualities and he can really show who he is, I always go back to the Pedro Morales debut against New York Red Bulls, and that was kind of the lift that kind of like sparked a little bit of a new era for the Whitecaps. He came on as a sub, and he was just floating balls all over the place. He played a nice, perfect ball into Kenny Miller for the third goal against the Red Bulls that day, and then he scores himself off a great bit of build-up there with Nigel Rio-Coker. So if they can get someone like that, someone like Pedro Morales is going to inspire players to take risks and drive forward, it's going to make a whole lot of a difference for sure.
Oh, she just gave me some nostalgia there. Rio-Coker, Kenny Miller, Pedro Morales.
Of course, of course. You got to throw it back to the good old days.
Yeah, you said Bolaños in there a minute ago. Oh, gosh.
Wow.
That was fun. Those are fun times. Not quite as fun now, you know, but again, we're a work in progress. We are real. There's no doubt about it. We're rebuilding. You know, we've got a couple of key pieces in the mix right now. And, you know, some of the new guys that we didn't really know that much about coming into the season that really, you know, had strong showings in Orlando. You know, obviously the main one, Thomas Asol, you know, he was fantastic in net those last 2.5 games. Leonard Owusu, another player, came in. He was everything we expected him to be. You know, he's that underlying sort of number 8 ball playing, almost like a sweeper for the midfield kind of thing. But he could ping balls forward. And again, we need someone like that, but just further up the field. You know, if we had another Owusu and just plopped him 20 yards ahead of him, that would just be perfect. Like, you know, what I mean, though? Like, he's just, like, aggressive, but he can go forward, but he can defend, but he can pass. And, like, I mean, we didn't really see. Maybe he can shoot. You know, who knows? Like,
yeah, probably.
I'd like my cam to be able to shoot. So
yeah, of course.
Yeah, just something like that, where it's just like one, just like an all around player. That's, you know, he doesn't have to excel at anything. Almost like a more high intensity Russell Tybert. I said this a few weeks ago that to me Russell Tybert doesn't excel at anything. He's very good at almost everything. You know, he's a very well rounded player. But he's not, you know, flashy with his footwork, or he can't shoot from 30 yards and get it in top corner every time. You know, he's just very well-rounded, and that's what I really like about him. If we had someone similar to that, but just maybe a little, that maybe had just like that little emphasis on
flair, on flair, and
yeah, you know, like someone that's like pretty well-rounded, and we just didn't quite embalm. Again, we tried him at CAM, especially in that, like his last showing was at the position that we're trying to fill. And that game, if we needed any more proof, just kind of showed us Inbom isn't the guy, and he wouldn't be the guy moving forward. And like we said, he wanted to go to Europe, and he made that public. And, you know, it wasn't quite the Alphonso Davies move to a European giant that maybe he'd hoped for or he would have liked. But, you know, he came to the MLS, he got his foot wet, he worked on some development things, and, you know, he's off to Russia. We do wish him the best of luck. And I think, sort of, as we kind of wrap up this sort of CAM Inbom sort of debate sort of thing, I think, you know, Inbom, he's off to Russia, we wish him the best of luck. It just didn't work out, you know. He's a decent player, it just wasn't wrong place, wrong time for Inbom.
Yeah, for sure. And the Whitecaps, you have to think, we're going through a lot of rebuilding last year and this year as well, so it just wasn't the right time for him to come here. And it wasn't the best place really to show himself, what he could do. I think he really got lucky with the move to Rubin Kazan, honestly.
Could you imagine him in like a 2016, 2017 score, like Tony Chani and him, or like Russell Tiber and like Pedro Morales?
I could.
And,
I would definitely I would have done better.
I would have, exactly. And it's just purely the situation of like, I think he would have thrived 3 years ago at, you know, at BC Place. You know, if he had Pedro Morales, Tybert, I don't know why, I really enjoyed watching Tony Chani play.
He was great.
Yeah, he was, sure. Yeah, you know, I think he was like similar to Leonard Owusu, you know, that similar sort of style. I would prefer to have Owusu, and I'm glad we do have him. But, you know, again, it's just the situation was unfortunate for Inbom.
Yeah, and I guess going forward, I mean, as we transition into previewing tomorrow's game, of course. But I think what's going to be really interesting going forward is seeing how this midfield lines up now that there's no Inbom. Mm-hmm. I mean, I mentioned formations a couple minutes ago, like the 4-4-2, the 4-3-3, the 4-2-3-1. What can we see the Whitecaps lining up as tomorrow? Because there's not going to be an Inbom. We don't know if there's going to be a Janiel Bikel. We don't know if he's fit yet. I was looking around Instagram earlier today, and it looks like Freddie Montero is not making the trip to Toronto. He won't play the games down in the six or the game against Montreal at Stade Saputo. So is that a big loss? I think it might be off the bench. But other than that, there was another rumor that maybe Milinkovic didn't even make the trip. Of course, he had a knock in the last, I think it was the last group stage game in MLS's back in Chicago. And it looks like he might be out for the first three games here. So it looks like he might be staying in Vancouver for the first three games. We'll see about that. I'm not too sure about that one, but we'll see. I think the midfield, you lose another winger as well if Milinkovic isn't going on the trip. Mm-hmm. But I think the most important part right now is the midfield. Do you pair Tybert with Owusu? What else can we do there? I don't know.
You raise a good question.
Well, because we don't know if Janiel Bikel is fit or not. That's the question.
I haven't heard really anything in the last, you know, basically as soon as they said that he wasn't going to Orlando, I haven't realistically heard his name ever since, you know, and that could be a good thing. That could be a bad thing. We don't know. And it is difficult. So I think for the sake of this, we'll say that he's not playing. Obviously, if he is healthy, I would slot him into my starting 11. But just sure. just for the sake of this, we'll say that he's not, because again, we don't know. The thing is, for me, I really liked when Tybert was moved out to left mid. I think he was there for, it was just one game.
I think it was the Seattle game.
It might have been the Seattle game. And I think I really enjoyed that when he was out in left mid. He was able to control the pace a bit more down the wing. Because again, like, a lot of our play does come from, you know, we have very attacking wing backs in Ali Adnan and Jake Nowinski. You know, both like to push forward. So we do quite a lot of it. And again, the middle of the field for us is almost a bit of a weak spot. So we do tend to go down the wings a lot. And I did like having Russell Tybert out in the wings. We could kind of set the pace a little bit more, and he could cut in. We could do a bit more defensive duties if Ali Adnan pushed up, or if Owusu pushed up, or like whatever. He was kind of able to be as he acted like a center mid, but literally just on the left side of the field. And I did really like that. But again, with no Imbom now and possibly no Bikel, I would say we'd have to pair him with Owusu. And for me, I think the 4-4-2 wasn't awful. You know, it's tough right now. And especially, like we said, there's no Milinkovic. Maybe you look to see, you know, Reyna out on the right. And again, you know, we have strikers again. You know, we had a 19-year-old and someone who wasn't really a striker as our only two attacking options in the entire tournament last month. So
I don't feel like a year already.
It's ages, man. I can't wait for the soccer to be back. But no, you know, we do have options again. We have Cavallini, you know, the big, and he's been sitting at home. He wants to go out and score. He wants to prove to the fans. And the longer that he doesn't score, it's going to get on his mind. The media is going to pick up on it. The fans are going to pick up on it. And that's the last thing he wants. So he's going to be hungry, and he's just going to want goals. To St. Ricketts, he had a good game. He scored against the Galaxy, obviously, to get the win in that last game before the season got suspended. And, you know, he's a little bit older, but, you know, he's kicking around. I love the way he plays and what he brings to the team and sort of energy. And, he's a fun guy, you know. He's always smiling. He's lifting spirits. And, you know, Christ, the Whitecaps needed some spirits lifted in that Seattle game. But you know what? realistically, we do have attacking options again. So I think in that sense, missing out on a winger, we're able to maybe put Reyna out on the right. Or we could see Raposo maybe get his first start. You know, we do have options, and obviously I think I do like Dahomey on the left. As long as he's not at striker, that was we're gonna pretend that that choice
that didn't happen.
That you're gonna pretend that didn't happen. But yeah, so yeah. I do think I would probably if Milinkovic isn't there and he is still suffering from that knock he picks up in Orlando, I wouldn't be surprised if he just saw Reyna with Cavallini and Ricketts up front. And really just a standard, nothing fancy. Because, I mean, again, we're not fancy. We're not really that flashy. Standard 4-4-2, get bodies in the midfield, send them forward, send them back. If we can get Owusu and Tybert box to box, both of them, I think that we could really unlock a lot of things with movement of two out-and-out strikers. We don't have a teenager and someone who's not a striker up front anymore. You know, we do have viable strikers that know how to move and know where to be, and they have experience, and they're both strong in the air. They're both big physical guys. So I'd really like to see the way that if Tybert and Owusu are the midfield pairing, I think a standard 4-4-2 would have to be the way to go.
Yeah, and I mean, you said it yourself, like throwing it back to the LA Galaxy game. I mean, honestly, everything that I think about that game is positive. Like, I remember watching that game and I was really excited, and I was really, I really like what I saw from that game. Like, every time I think the LA Galaxy game, it's just all positive. And I think just remembering that game, it was a 4-4-2 with Cavallini and Ricketts up top. And it worked really well, honestly. I mean, you also had you didn't even have Owusu in that team. You had Imbom and Tybert still in the midfield. So I think it's going to be exciting to see Owusu.
We had Owusu for 6 minutes. That's all I'm saying.
Owusu for 6 minutes, yes. But you add in Owusu now with Dahomey, possibly Reyna out wide if Milinkovic isn't there, Cavallini and Ricketts up top. I'd say that looks pretty threatening.
Yeah.
And you have, of course, Tyrant supplying some good passing as well in there. Adnan bombing forward from left back. And hey, just a reminder, we could see Gutierrez coming in at left mid and Adnan coming at left mid as well. So it's
gonna two left mids. Left back mid. And left back.
Left back and left mid. Yeah.
There's definitely some options there, and like you said, that just sounds so much more formidable than what we had in Orlando with Dahomey and, like, you know, Reyna up front, or Theo Bear with Inbombs in behind him. It just sounds more complete and more aggressive and more attacking. And, you know, again, like I've said this a couple of times already this episode, that's what we need to be. We need to be more attacking. We need to be more aggressive in the midfield. We need to be a bit smarter. And, you know, Cavallini's a very smart player. So is Ricketts. They have experience. They're out and out strikers. They've rested. They're in their position that, you know, they're born to play. And everything's just kind of, it's hard to say things about that MLS's back tournament, really, just because of how much we were lacking. I mean, you saw the options of the bench, and most times we wouldn't make more than 2 subs out of 5 purely just because of who was on the bench. And no offense to, you know, the academy players that came up and stepped up in the tournament, but if you're looking to bring on an impact player, you know, I'd much rather have, you know, Freddie Montero coming off the bench, or Ricketts coming off the bench, or Raposo, than some of the other players. So
yeah, and I mean, you got to give credit to MDS. I mean, he said it a couple weeks ago where he was saying he didn't want to bring on those youngsters because it wasn't the right environment to put them in. Mm-hmm. And I think he learned a little bit of that from putting Patrick Metcalf in the San Jose game. And I mean, as a youngster, you want to go into a good game, right? You want to make your debut in a win.
You don't want to get overwhelmed.
That's no, and of course. And you want to, like, be able to show a little bit of what you can do and just feel the good energy of a win, right? Mm-hmm. And then MDS put Metcalf into that San Jose game. It was the ultimate collapse. I think it's the worst debut you can possibly get, unfortunately. Yeah. But I think he learned from that, and I think you got to respect MDS a lot for not forcing the academy players into those types of situations. So big props to MDS for doing that. I just wanted to give him a little bit of credit there where it's due.
So just before we do wrap up here, I'm going to get Sebastian's lineup predictions in just a second, but I just did want to talk also with the listeners about our sort of content plan for the next couple of weeks. Obviously, there's 6 games happening in around 3 weeks' time, and I'm not sure if you guys, you know, would like 6 podcasts in 3 weeks, or if not, it would be a lot, especially, you know, we play Toronto twice in a week, and we play Montreal twice in a week in a couple of weeks' time. Like, it would just be a lot sort of all at once. So what sort of our plan was, myself and Sebastian talked about this before we hopped on the call today. So after the first game tomorrow against Toronto, we'll hop into like a 2-minute Zoom call and just put out our thoughts onto Twitter at 90 plus podcast. And from there, you can find myself at Rick Eddie Ben and at Sebastian P74. Go follow us if you haven't already. And then after the second game against Toronto, we'll sit down and have a bigger breakdown of the 2 games. And then we'll have a podcast after the Montreal game on the 25th of August. And then we'll have a podcast after the September 5th game against Toronto. And these will be a little bit shorter, about 30 minutes, just breaking down our thoughts, giving kind of player, you know, player ratings and those sorts of, you know, the standard things. And then on the September 13th game against Montreal, do the same thing as we did in that Toronto game, where just 2 minutes, put it on Twitter at 90 plus podcast, and then have a bigger, more in-depth breakdown after the September 16th game. So hopefully you guys are all right with that. I think that's a pretty fair balance of short bite size of contents and individual game breakdowns, and then sort of bigger overall big picture things. I think that's a pretty decent mix, and I think Sebastian agrees as well. So just before we do wrap up episode 16, Sebastian, can you get lineup predictions and a score prediction for tomorrow's game?
Of course. I'm going to say it's going to be a tough game. I'm going to say 2-1 TFC. Mm-hmm. Just because I feel like I could be wrong with this, because MDS might choose to go with the lineup he had at MLS's back and try and integrate these guys slowly. Mm-hmm. The one, and I'm speaking on Cavallini, Ricketts, and the guys that didn't make the trip to MLS's back. But again, these are regular season games. They count for points in the standings, so he might take the risk and put those guys in. Mm-hmm. They say that they've been keeping fit, so I'm going to say 2-1 TFC, just because the team kind of has to re-gel a little bit. So they might have a little bit of problems with that. And my lineup prediction is going to be Hassall, Adnan, Veselinovic, Cornelius. And okay. Nerwinski. Those are the back four. Mm-hmm. And then in midfield, I'm going to go with Dahomey.
4-4-2?
4-4-2, yes.
Okay.
4-4-2. Dahomey out wide, Tybert and Owusu in the middle. And I'm going to say Reyna. Out at left wing, but he'll probably get like a little bit more of a free role to roam around. Mm-hmm. And then up top, Cavallini and Ricketts. That's what I'm going to go for.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you mostly. The only thing I'm going to change, I'm going to stick in Andy Rose over Cornelius. I think Cornelius did have a very solid game against Kansas City, but I think Andy Rose also had a solid, and I know this was like, you know, by now like 6 months ago, but he had a very solid game against the LA Galaxy. He hit the crossbar, if I remember correctly. Always love it when a big man scores. But I do think that, in my opinion, I think Andy Rose, if he has stayed, you know, been fit this whole time and everything else, I think he's going to be back in the starting picture. But yeah, everything else I'm going to go for the same lineup wise. I'm going to go 1-1. I think the Whitecaps, you know, they defended pretty well in the tournament. Obviously, a lot of that was sort of, I will say a lot of it was luck. Kansas City missed a lot of chances in that game. Same with Chicago. So I'm going to say 1-1. In terms of who's getting the goal, I'm going to say Tybert, you know, captain, first game back. He's back in Toronto, you know, he's going to step up. I think it's going to be captain Tybert grabs the equalizer. So
he's going to do it again. He's done it before. He can do it again.
Exactly.
He scored in Toronto before.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, of course.
All right. So I think with that, that is going to wrap up episode 16 here on the 90 Plus podcast. Sebastian, as always, thank you for joining. To our listeners, thank you for joining. Hope everyone's staying safe and, you know, practicing social distancing and everything. And, you know, get ready for some action. Some MLS action is back. The Whitecaps are back. 90 Plus is back. It's a good time.
It's a good time. Just make sure you stay in quarantine because cases are going up. So everyone stay at home and stay at home,
watch soccer, listen to 90 Plus.
There you go.
I don't know what else you guys would be doing. So I think with that's going to be episode 16. Thanks, you guys. Until next time.